My name is John Lansma. I'm Gerald F. Hawthorne, Professor of New Testament Greek and Exegesis at Wheaton College.
I am so excited to see you, Dr. Lansma, here in our little place.
This is a wonderful facility. It's good to see you face-to-face. Yeah. We do so many of these.
We usually do things by Zoom, right?
Yeah. Remotely, ever since you left Wheaton College, which we're still sorry.
Yeah.
But this is my first visit to the Lanier Theological Library, and I just invite anyone who has not been here to come. There are probably many good reasons to come to Houston, and this is now one of them.
Yeah, it's something to see.
It is, and it's just growing with the new construction.
Yeah, our learning center should be open, we hope, by the summer of 2023, so 5 months from now, maybe, something like that.
It's a beautiful grounds and amazing facilities. You feel like you're at Oxford.
Yeah. That's what we hope. Mm-hmm. You stepped out of Houston and stepped right in Oxford, England.
That's what it feels like. Or into Narnia.
Yeah, that's true. In certain places, we need a fawn. We need a fawn of Mr. Tumnus to join us at that point. Hey, I know you, and I've known you for a number of years, but for those who don't know John Lansma, who is he?
Okay. I've been at Wheaton, just my professional side in any event. I've been at Wheaton since 2003. Before that, I taught at Moody Bible Institute, started there in 1996. Before that, did my PhD in New Testament with I. Howard Marshall at Aberdeen, Scotland. Before that, did my undergraduate and seminary work at what is now Cornerstone. In those years, it was called Grand Rapids Baptist College and Seminary. Mm-hmm. And before that, was married to Lisa, my wife.
Okay. So, this is a reverse chronology, yes. Moving backwards.
And then moving forward,
we
had one daughter, Kirsten, who is married to Blake. And they just gave us our first grandchild.
Congratulations.
Just a month ago. Yeah. December 16,
and they're only... Which is my birthday.
Is it really?
It happens to be my birthday, yeah. Beethoven's birthday.
You guys can exchange cards.
We'll have to do that,
It's only 4 days removed from Kirsten's own birthday, and they only live 5 minutes away.
Oh, how sweet.
So, great. Yeah, a lot of grandparent time.
We hope for you forward. We'll just have lots of time together.
But, to flesh out the story, born in Grand Rapids, Michigan, so West Michigan. Hmm. Good Dutch name, Lansma.
Two A's.
Two A's and a ma on the end, Friesen. Grew up in a Baptist church that the first founding pastor was my great-grandfather, who was ordained for that but was a tailor by trade. But it was a group of Dutch-speaking, very reformed in theology, but Baptist, small but tight group. And he was one of several who would read sermons because they weren't trained preachers, and apparently he was a good reader. So
he'd read them in front of other groups of people?
Yeah, for this community, for this church.
Okay, yeah.
And then ultimately was ordained 1894. And became the pastor for 50 years. So that was the church I grew up in. And then after my PhD, when I came back in 1994, they were doing their centenary, and they said, hey, wouldn't this be nice to ordain you at the same, 100 years? and so it was all part of that.
All part of that.
Extremely meaningful to me.
Oh, I bet it was, yeah.
By that point, I had been thinking pastoral work. This was after my PhD. I was leaning in the direction of teaching, which is what, in fact, I've done.
Mm. You've pastored students in a way, right?
I mean, that's your identity. That's your calling. But even though I was sure of that, or confident at that point, I thought I want to do that under the auspices of the church. And so it felt appropriate to go ahead and get ordained and and think of what I do and, in fact, make what I do, you know, an extension of who I am as a member of the church.
Yeah. Well, for a number, for was it 3 years you were department chair in languages there, modern and classical languages at Wheaton College. And I think you had a big impact. I mean, and we're going to talk today together a little bit about Wheaton's heritage in training people and in these languages, because we love languages here. Mark, when Mark teaches, he pulls out Greek and Hebrew every week and works from that and, and trains people. He teaches a class of about 500. And we have Greek classes here, and I hope we have Hebrew classes in the future, of lay people. It's not formal education, but it's an opportunity for people to actually begin to read some text together. And it's a great, great thing. We're reading now in the Gospel of Mark and Colossians and the Didache. That's what we're reading together in our second year program. But languages of late, both in seminaries and even at Wheaton College, people are showing a bit less interest in them than they did in former times.
Yeah.
Let's go a little bit about the history.
Yeah. So some of this you can map out over the last 20 or 30 years, and I've done that kind of thing. It's a somewhat precipitous fall off over 20. And I've anecdotally, I've talked to colleagues elsewhere, a friend who teaches at Dallas, and he describes, you know, the same basic phenomenon.
This
there.
Is Dallas Theological
Seminary. Yeah, Dallas
Seminary.
Theological Seminary, yeah. He didn't give me a figure, but I guessed he was talking about 25 years or so and a drop-off of around 100 students, you know.
Well, I mean, Dallas has been one of the schools that has very strongly insisted on the study, or as other schools have sort of dropped off those requirements. Dallas has been one of those that just keep the requirements
thankfully
handy.
Yeah, thankfully. But you can put that on an even kind of larger map, just marking out some larger trends in 1860 when Wheaton was founded. You weren't admitted into the college unless you already had their version of competency in classical Greek. And then, in fact, the curriculum was such that you didn't read the New Testament until your senior year, because freshman, sophomore, junior year, you were reading classical texts because that's what you were trained in. All of that is foundation. And then at the end of the process, you got to the New Testament.
You know, this is all what we would call today undergraduate work.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Yeah. That's that's for undergraduate.
Right. So for people that didn't have that skill and they showed up at Wheaton's campus.
Well, they had established what is still there, the Wheaton Academy. But in those years, my understanding, it was a remedial program for those students who arrived and wanted to enroll but didn't have Greek. And so the academy existed to give them that training so they could launch on their way.
Yeah.
So that's 1860. But if you fast forward to 1949, I think that's the right year, things have changed. And the culture, the surrounding culture, has already begun to move away from the liberal arts in many ways. Wheaton held on to that identity somewhat against the tide. But still, in 1949, all Wheaton College BA students, all the BA students, had to have at least a year of Greek or Latin. So again, that tells you something about where the college is at, where the society is at, how they value these things.
Well, what's happened in colleges since 1949 is the development of what we might call professional education.
Yeah.
People become educators. People become, go into business. Whereas before, those kind of degrees weren't really offered or thought about.
Right.
You train people to think.
Yeah.
You train people to communicate well, to be able to stand in front of a group or to write. And you did a variety of things to help them think, and then they would go into their professions. So since 49, those kind of things have happened.
Yeah.
And now the preference is for maybe STEM or engineering or those kind of things. That's where education seems to be going these days.
All of which
less
are
the liberal arts.
Yeah, all of which are good in and of themselves. But what you are seeing just by those two markers is kind of a slow glacial move away from interest in classical antiquity, at least as a subject of study, and the languages that go with it. And this is symptomatic of not just what was happening in higher education, but throughout the culture. My parents, when they went through school, learned Latin as a matter of course in public school system. By the time I went through, it just wasn't even offered at my high school, and I'm sure that's representative broadly. It's different in classical schools, but in public schools broadly, I think that's largely true. So that by the time you get up to 1980s, 90s, 2000s, you can no longer assume that parents, by and large, have had any exposure to Greek or Latin. So the or others, other influencers of high school kids who are beginning to look at college and beginning to ask about what am I going to major in? What's worth it?
So what do you say to students who are coming in and for parents who haven't had any training in there as to why this is important? Why is it important that my son or daughter spend curriculum dollars to learn Latin, to learn Greek? What do you say to that?
Yeah, there's a whole kind of a number of layers of answers to that kind of thing. Part of it goes to, you know, why the liberal arts, why humanities? And some of those conversations can be answered kind of simply by saying, well, it's not just what you can do, it's who you are as a human being. And that means, do you understand your place in history? Do you understand the flow of what brought us here? Are you equipped with the categories, understanding the experience to assess big questions and answer them wisely and responsibly? Not just, are you going to be an attorney who can argue a case, you know, effectively and make a lot of money doing it, or business? And again, none of these are to disparage any of those vocational tracks. They're all vital and all necessary, and they're all part of the body of Christ.
And I bet people who go to law school, I bet law schools really do like to have people who can think like that and understand big questions before they even start training them in law. I bet they like that. I remember my wife was working with at Houston Baptist University, and she was directing a program of, to help people get into medical schools and such. And the medical schools really did like the fact that there were students who had read classical text, and they were from the Honors College. And what that meant is not just that, okay, they were smarter than the average bear, but that they had done some things and understood some things that helped them become conversationalists and not just science geeks.
And that, too, you parse out in different ways. Some of that is specific. So much of the terminology of science and medicine derives from Greek and Latin. So just, you know, at a basic terminological level, it's helpful to have that. And modern medicine stems out of Greek civilization, you know, so there's roots if we're talking about medicine. But you could do the same thing with architecture, law, so many things.
So many
stem
things
from classical antiquity. So,
and part of studying architecture, let's say, begins by let's take a look at how basilicas were built. You know, you start with those kinds of basic historical moments, and then you build upon that. You add to that in a way.
So there's just the broad roots of civilization and particular disciplines, you know, there's and the language, you know, that goes with it. And you were hinting at this there, thinking skills, the ability to be mentally nimble, analytical,
good word. I like that.
And contemplative, reflective, the ability to see different sides of the same thing and allow space to yourself and others to consider those possibilities and analyze. These are all, you know, it's
these are all some of the benefits.
Intellectual virtues, you know, that come uniquely in some ways with the kind of learning you do in language.
And the liberal arts, the other liberal arts as well. One of the good impulses that I see happening now is the development of these Christian classical schools, where instead of going to a public high school or a public grammar school, people will go through their whole 12 years before they get to college in a Christian environment, which is good, but also a classical environment where they're learning Latin, they're learning Greek, they're reading these texts, they're asking some of the big questions.
Yeah.
yeah. learning to think and to yeah. analyze, and then to be able to communicate those yeah. things and do it well.
Which is, as a movement, greatly encouraging
yeah.
to see. I'm all in favor of public schools as well, so I'm not disparaging.
And I'm the product of public
yeah,
schools.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah.
And that it was a great American idea, and it's well worth preserving and promoting.
Yeah.
But the classical schools are doing something special mm-hmm. and different.
It's not for everybody.
And for those of us who are interested in these disciplines, you know, it's a resource.
Yeah.
What is... To oversimplify, what's a diminishing value in the wider population is an ascending value in a specialized part of the population, and particularly the classical schools.
Well, it's a great impulse that I see happening, and we're excited and they see it encouraged by that.
Yeah.
So if I were to come to Wheaton College, or a student were to come to Wheaton College mm-hmm. to study languages, what mm-hmm. would they?
Well, actually,
who would they study with? What would sure. they study? How would
yeah.
it work?
And good question. But can I add one more thought to the other question about the why?
Yeah.
Because I was just trying to give the good, important liberal arts, humanities argument, why is this a value to society? And that's all true. And we're saying, I want to add, because it's important to me, I know it's important to you, because of the gospel.
Ah,
indeed. You know, it's Greek and Hebrew that the scriptures were originally written in. And the church will rue the day that it allows that knowledge to go by the boards generationally. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that needs a certain amount of infrastructure to be done at all or to be done well. And for that, we have to have strong, robust programs with a good breadth of offerings. And for that, you need students. And for that, we need families sending their students, you know, to support these kinds of things.
And Wheaton College has done such an excellent job yeah. doing that. When I was there and I was teaching some of the Greek students at the graduate level, I had wonderful students. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were far ahead of the game of anybody else,
yeah.
any other school, any other students that I'd seen. And I had actually studied to stay ahead of them. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing
mm-hmm.
when the faculty member has to study to stay ahead of the students.
Yep. Yeah, extremely bright.
Yeah.
Often in my case, I'm happy to say smarter than me. That doesn't mean they know more than me, but more yeah. intellectual horsepower.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so that's a good thing. So
yeah.
Wheaton has produced a lot of great yeah. folks, and yeah. we're not going to go into that, but mm-hmm. you also have a lot of great faculty who are teaching. Yeah. With it. Tell us a little bit about the undergraduate, graduate faculty. Who are some of the folks people would come and study with?
So, yeah, when I originally... was appointed at Wheaton. I was a dual appointment. So I was in the modern and what we now call the modern and classical languages. At that time, it was just foreign languages. We rebranded ourselves. And that's where Greek and Latin and now happily Hebrew are all taught now. I say that simply because I think it's appropriate in a liberal arts, humanities-based Christian college for the languages to be taught as human languages and not merely as stepping stones to exegesis. They mm-hmm. are useful for exegesis, mm-hmm. but you need to let go of that for a while and just soak in the languages and learn them as human languages.
Yes.
So yeah. it's good to have them just separated mm-hmm. in a different department. And taught there. And so as far as colleagues, one of the things for which we're very thankful over the last, 3 years now, is we were able to hire a devoted Semitist, young guy named Dr. Drew Burlingame, PhD, University of Chicago.
Which is a great, great school.
Wonderful, one of the world's best. And he's becoming one of the world's best. You won't want to hear me say that, but it's true.
No. He's getting the credentials as a young scholar to do it. We ought to invite him here to our library.
I would
sometime.
Love to see him come here, and he would enjoy it.
Let's figure out a way to make that happen.
And not only is he a brilliant scholar, which he is, he's a wonderful person. Again, I'm really embarrassing him if he's listening to this.
I'm going to send it to him.
He was as a student. I had him as an undergraduate student.
Yeah. So you, they study with you if they're doing Greek. They study with Drew if they're going to do Hebrew.
Now with Drew if they do Hebrew.
Now, because of time, we're going to move on. Okay. But what about in the graduate side
and
of things?
But let me say, he's a wonderful communicator, and he cares about his students. Great. And and then our classicist on the undergrad side is Dr. Alexander Loney, University of Michigan undergrad, which I am in favor of, Duke PhD, and is also doing wonderful work, publishes with Oxford Cambridge Press, and again, very recognized and respected.
And when you say classicist, what languages?
Well, so he's teaching Latin, all of our Latin, unless someone else steps in to relieve him so he can do some other things, and upper division classical Greek reading. So if it were Homer, Thucydides, and so on, Dr. Loney would be teaching those.
I see.
When I teach the upper division Greek reading classes, it's New Testament and Church Fathers.
Mm. So you're going forward from the New Testament. He's going backwards at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For the Greek. And then he does the Latin upper division, and Drew again does the Hebrew.
Well, one of the things you and I have been able to do over the last few years is to do a podcast together.
Yeah.
Not this podcast, but one from Wheaton College that we cooperate together to do called Exegetically Speaking. And last I was there, when I was on campus, Rebecca said we were the number one podcast at Wheaton College. And part of what we do is we take 7 or 8 minutes, sometimes a little longer, to talk about a passage in the Greek or the Hebrew and how it pays off to read it in the original languages. And we hope to be able to, through that, to promote the study of these languages together.
Yeah. So, you know, your question a few minutes ago was, you know, what do you say to, you know, people out there? My experience is people in the church know that this is important. And if you told them it was under threat, you know, their passions are aroused. But we've just allowed ourselves as a society to drift away, move away. And college is expensive. And if we're sending our kids there, we're all asking, well, how are they going to repay all these loans? Probably not with the humanities. So we're acknowledging that reality. But it's just reminding all of us, especially the Exegetically Thinking podcast, think about what this means. Think about why, through concrete examples on that podcast, why this is so important and worth preserving in the church.
Exactly. Dr. John Losbaugh, so good to see you. Thanks for being with us today on the Stone
Chapel. Thanks for the invitation.
If you learned too much today in the podcast, there is one guaranteed cure, and that is to share it with a friend. It'll take the pressure off the brain, okay? If you've never visited the amazing Lanier Theological Library, make plans to do it soon. We are growing. We're expanding. We've got a new presence over in Oxford, England. This is a place of solace and discovery. If you have comments for us or questions or just want to be in touch, contact us at podcast@lanierlibrary.org. And thanks to all those who make this podcast possible. You know who you are. Till next week, thanks for listening.
Hey, stand by for a nugget of wisdom from Dr. John Losbaugh.
Theology has taught me, Bible has taught me, experience has taught me that if God could not use our mistakes, he would not have any material to work with.